good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's BJ and I'm an alcoholic.
BJ.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. The restrooms are across the foyer and up the more shallow flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we will be discussing step 4, part 1. Please join me in welcoming our panel. We have Doug and Matt. Alrighty, I will read the first paragraph, which tonight is on page 64, if you'd like to follow along. And then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So page 64. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. Let's start with Doug.
Hi everybody, my name's Doug and I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Can everybody hear me all right?
I'm
gonna get used to this. Okay. Step 4. I was in the program for a while, you know, before I got to step 4. And one of my huge character defects is what kept me from getting on step 4. And actually it was a couple of them, but fear was one of the big ones. Doing that fearless and thorough moral inventory, man, that fear, I was like, oh, you know, I didn't want to touch it. And procrastination, anybody ever heard of that word? Associated with alcoholics in any way, shape, or form? So, yeah, I procrastinated for quite a while. And before I could even get to that step, I really had to, like, get that step 3 thing going, turning my will over to higher power. I mean, that was a big deal. And it took me a little while, and I was working on step 3 for quite some time. And my sponsor, great guy who got sober up in Washington, D.C., he had his sponsor come down, and his sponsor looked like Don King. Black guy, afro up to here, very well dressed, well spoken. Didn't say much, but when he said something, it hit you. So how's that turning your will going over? How's step three going for you? I said, well, I'm working on it. You know, turning my will over. Said, that's all right. You're just not in enough pain yet. And he was absolutely right. You know, I just wasn't enough pain. And finally, I did turn my will over, and I had a trust. And my sponsor said, look, you got to do this step. And he goes, and because it's taking you so long, I'm going to help you out. Come over to my house on Saturday, clear your schedule. I came over and he goes, it's this easy. Here's a notebook, here's a pen. Start when you were born and write down every time alcohol impacted your life. Go. And man, I had to, you know, and I had to do that inventory. But first I just had to start inventorying things, and it's what the big book talks about. Working that inventory, just bringing it all up. I was born into an alcoholic family. I had my first drink when I was an infant. My grandmother kept feeding me drinks until I got drunk. Grew up in a good family. You know, my parents took care of me. My dad was an alcoholic. Never saw him drunk at home, but he drank outside. And I had to go through all these things. That was the inventory. And I had to work from my childhood and work all the way up. And I had to start finding things like where was fear involved, where was insecurity involved. And just started talking about every time alcohol impacted me. I don't know about anybody else in here, but you know, the first time I chose to take a drink, I was 13 years old. And I drank because I was at a friend's bar mitzvah with another friend of mine. And we were nervous, and he had two gorgeous 18-year-old cousins who we were in awe of, and they thought it was funny, and they just kept handing these two young 13-year-olds drinks. So off we went. But I did find out that when I took my first drink, whew, man, took some of the fear away, gave me some false security and false hope, and man, I loved it. And I had to go right from the beginning, right through those first drinks, and I had to start covering all my behavior. And that's what I went through. I wrote it all down, and then my sponsor took a look. He goes, hey, what about? And he started talking to me about personal things we had talked about. And I had to go kind of back through my life again and just started just doing that complete and thorough inventory. And I couldn't do anything else with it until I got gut level honest and covered all those things. And the big thing he hit me on was he goes, hey, I want to know, you know, what happened, but I want to know about the behaviors. What did you do and how did you feel? Thank you.
I'm not, I'm an alcoholic. So for me, I had a lot of the same similar experiences. You know, when I got here, I jumped right into 1, 2, and 3 almost immediately, and they were kind of, 1 was probably the hardest step I ever did. 2 was just kind of, at the beginning, I kind of went, eh. And 3, I went, yeah, all right, I can try to, I can make a decision to turn my will over, right? And I got to step 4, and my sponsor sat with me, and he said, look, he's like, you know, you got to be ready to do some work now. I mean, this is where the work sets in. And, he said, I'm going to let you know that this is kind of where the AA waltz sets in. You know, you do the 1, 2, 3 drink, 1, 2, 3 drink. And I really just did not want to drink. And so I went on for a couple months, you know, like I would sit down and I'd make this list. And I would look at it and I would crumble it up and I'd throw it away. Because I'll be really, really honest with you all right now. I really just thought I had a drinking problem. That's truly what I believed. I believed that there was something different about me when I picked up the first drink. All bets were off. I didn't know what was going to happen. Sometimes I would have 5 and have a good time and no harm, no foul. Other times I would drink until I couldn't stand up anymore and I'd wind up in jail or something stupid like that. So for me, I just really just wanted to be taught how to drink like a gentleman. I truly thought that that's what I was getting in for. I thought that's what I was signing up for. So I really didn't want to face any truths about who I was as a person because I had convinced myself for years that I was a pretty decent guy who gave to a lot of people and did a lot of stuff for a lot of people. Never mind the episodes that I would have while I was drunk, or, you know, the times I wouldn't show up for, you know, family events, whatever the case might be. I truly thought I was an RA person. But I did. I learned that liquor was but a symptom, and as you just heard, I think that as I crumbled that paper up and I threw it away, I just kind of put myself in a deeper hole of pain, and I just kept suffering through it. You know, I'd write down some names, and I'd go to my sponsor and say, I'm just not ready yet to do this step, or whatever the case might be. I'm just not ready for it. And he would say, well, you know, look, let me offer you some suggestions. Let me, you know, let's start working with the people that are in your life immediately and just do like five. Just get five done, you know? And I would do five, and I would look at it and I'd say, well, I'd do the first three columns, and I would get to the fourth, and I just couldn't see what I was doing, you know? Where's my part in this? The whole nine yards. So I started throwing it away again, and my sponsor finally came to me and he said, look, I'm giving you a date. We're getting together on this date. You're going to do your fifth step with me. You need to do your fourth step, period. Just sit down and do it. So, of course, like any good alcoholic who's also a procrastinator, I think it was a Saturday morning we met. On Friday night, I was up till like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm still jotting stuff down in a book. And, you know, I got to be honest with you. That was the first time I think I ever was honest with myself about who I was as a person. I started writing it down, and I started seeing a theme in the way that I treated folks, and it was a pretty hard thing for me to realize who I was as a human being towards other people and my behaviors and the way that I would treat them. So really, for me, it was getting down to the cause and the conditions of who I was as a person that was causing me to drink on a regular basis. Because really, I mean, I just didn't want to deal with anything. And alcohol was my cure to that. I could treat people any way I wanted to treat them. I could talk to people, I could, you know, whatever lie I needed to tell, I could do that as long as I had alcohol to tide me over. And I think the pain that I'm talking about is that I then took the alcohol away. And when I took the alcohol away, not much changed about who I was as a person. I still was doing the same behaviors and acting the same way, and I realized something's got to change. And I think that pain that I was in and that desperation was the only reason that I sat down and did that fourth step until 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and then went on to do my fifth step. So, thanks.
Thanks, guys. Next reading is also on page 64. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with?
Okay, this is the reason I'm here tonight, to speak about resentment. I came here with a lot of resentment, and I had some big ones. The reason I got sober was because I died on the bottom of the swimming pool in 1990, working. I got brought up by somebody, they started CPR, couldn't get an air in, turned me on my side, pushed, got the pool out of my lungs, and kept doing CPR until paramedics showed up. No heartbeat, no pulse, no breathing. They put me in an ambulance and took me to a hospital. And on the way back somewhere, they got my heart started. I'm telling you that to tell you why I had tremendous brain damage. And that the first thing I can remember after that, and I don't remember very much for about a year, just like a Brady Bunch episode where somebody has something and you say, I've seen that on TV, but I lived it. But I remember a neurologist looking right at me and saying, you have done so much damage to your brain that you can never drink again. And I just looked at him and said, what are you talking about? He said, the reason you feel good when you drink is that oxygen molecules attach in the center of your brain. The reason you feel good when you drink is because alcohol molecules crowd that same part of your brain and don't allow oxygen to attach. And you feel good because you're being starved of oxygen. And he said, you have done so much damage to your brain that you have no room to ever take alcohol again because you've done so much. I had never had a drink since August 13th of 1990. But just because I didn't drink doesn't mean I was an alcoholic. Anybody here a dry drunk? I was dry drunk until January of 1999 when I lost my family. So, good long period of not drinking. But it doesn't change my behavior. And that's why I have to do these steps. I have to admit I'm powerless. I have to discover that there's a higher power. I have to turn my will over. And then I had to do this inventory. I told you that to tell you this, that when I was in recovery, I went back to work and I drowned two more times in a year. Serious brain damage. It finally kept me from doing that kind of diving anymore. And I went to teach for a while. And I had an opportunity to go ask for help because my marriage was crumbling. It was falling apart. Anybody relate to that with like alcoholism or anything? And I went to save my marriage. So I started going to ask for help. And I asked a friend of mine to get me in with a psychologist. I went to see this psychologist. Had to be on the sly because if anybody found out at work, I would have lost special pays. I would have been out of there. And so I had, in order to keep taking care of my family, I had to kind of go on the sly to this doctor. I went to him. He said, yeah, we can help, but bring your wife in here and, you know, we'll talk about this. Brought my wife in. And then I had to go on the road working. And my wife started to see this doctor. I thought, yeah, it's helping my marriage. Way long story short, this doctor and my wife got into a romantic relationship. That leads to resentment. I finally went away to a rehab, got sober, my wife came up, and I got honest, told her, hey, this is everything I've ever done. We had, hey, we're back together, relationship. You know, we had sex for the first time in forever. Hey, this is great. She goes, I gotta tell you something. I'm in a relationship with this doctor. So I had this, anybody think that's justified resentment? I didn't get sober. It wasn't until years later that I went again to a rehab and we were talking about resentment. They go, man, you got a big problem with resentment. And this counselor said, do you know what resentment means? I was like, yeah, it means you're like mad all the time. He said, the word resentment, it's Latin. The root is sent, S-E-N-T. Sent means to feel. Re means to feel over and over and over again. It's a feeling you can't let go of. And it says in the big book, and I'm sure we're going to read it here somewhere, resentment's a luxury we cannot afford. And I love my resentment because I deserved it. I mean, it was mine. I deserved it. I got to hold on to that one. And let me tell you something. They told me there, having resentment is like taking poison, wishing the other person would die. And that's exactly what it is. And I was killing myself with this resentment that I was justified to have. There's no justification. It'll just kill us all. And I carried it for a long time. I had an outburst at this place and they sent me to see this guy. Down the hall, go see this guy. So I got down this in this building, down this hall, knock on the door, dark office. There's one little desk lamp on it. It's dark in there. There's a big, big leather chair. Go ahead and sit right there. I sit down in this chair. This big guy comes over and says, "Right, you got that now burst, and you got physical with somebody else in here, and we're going to have to kick you out of here unless we can talk about this." I'm like, "Hey, whatever. I'm actually invested in this now. What do I have to do?" He said, "I spent 7 years in prison for killing my wife and her lover in my bed. But you, you're angry." I was like, "Whoa, this murderer is telling me this." And he said, "There's only one way that you're going to be able to get better." And I had told him about this thing with this doctor and why I was so furious. He said, "There's one way you'll get better." He says, "It's in the big book." And I'm thinking, "No, you know, what is it? What are you talking about?" Okay, so you've got to go to the end of the big book and read Freedom from Bondage. And has anybody in here read Freedom from Bondage? A couple of us. Other people are going, "Freedom from Bondage, what is that?"
Read it tonight.
Go read it in the back of the big book tonight. But I read Freedom from Bondage, and it essentially says, if I have resentment, if I want to get over it, that I have to go to the person who I'm angry at, and I got to pray for them to get exactly what I want for myself. And I got to pray that every day for 2 weeks. And he told me that, and I was like, "What are you talking about?" He says, "That's what you have to do." I said, "I got to pray for this guy to have sex with my wife?" He goes, "I didn't tell you that." He said, "What I did tell you was that you have to pray for what you really want for yourself, for that person to have." So every night I went and I prayed, "God, let this guy have sex with my wife. Oh, I hate it." And the next night I prayed it, and the next night I prayed it. Until finally what I did was I started to think, "Man, what do I really want? What do I want for myself that I can pray for?" It took me days of thinking about it and praying for this guy. Finally I said, "You know, what's going on with this guy? Why did he have a relationship with my wife? He's a successful married doctor. He was an officer in the Navy. What's going on with him?" And over the days of praying for that person, I started to really feel bad for him. I thought, "Man, he must have a tough life if he's risking everything to do this." And that praying every day turned me inside out. And I started to see things in a different way, and I started to look at myself. And it gets into it later on in this step. But I had to really pray as hard as I could for what I really wanted for myself, for him to have. And I figured out that that was peace and that I could pray for. Thank you.
Thanks. So we were talking before the meeting, and we were talking about how the last time I shared here, somebody like covered everything that I was going to say. And I think that just happened again. But
so sorry.
No resentment there, trust me. You know, hearing what was just shared, you know, I think for me, when I first got here and I got to this step, I don't even think that I realized what resentment was, to be honest with you. I thought there was me who was just going through life, like I said, drinking, and then there was you who was doing all these things to me. You know, God was walking around angry and he was punishing me by creating all this havoc in my life. My ex-wife was doing all these things. My kids were doing these things. My parents were doing these things. And it was all the things that you were doing wrong, period. Like, there was no, I would think, well, maybe I shouldn't have said that, or maybe I shouldn't have acted that way. But, you know, if they would have just done it the way that I wanted them to do it, we would have never gotten to this point. You know what I mean? If they'd have just made sense to me, we'd have never got here. So for me, you know, I think the first part of it was realizing what a resentment actually was. And as I started doing step four, I started realizing that I was harboring resentments, like, for people back when I was in middle school. You know what I mean? The kid who punched me in the face and took my money for lunch, you know? Like, I'm still holding on to that, like, 30 years later, you know? And so that's, which, just by the way, that's, I don't think that's normal now. Back then, you know, like, I would think about that kid. I share with my fiance and some kids, I used to have one kid who would beat me up every day on the way home from school. I could remember the kid's name to no end, like it was yesterday. And I remember what it felt like to get beat up by this kid. And we fought every day. And he would beat me up every single day. And I remember him being like one of the first people that made it onto my list and didn't even realize what a resentment was. So here I am, I've quit drinking. I realize that now there's resentments. And I'm starting to write these folks down, and I'm learning how to deal with this stuff. And I, too, came to the part where I needed to pray for some folks, because as this paragraph read, I started to realize that I now have a spiritual malady. I now realize that there's something spiritually sick with me. I have an illness now. You know what I mean? Like, I've identified this. I'm no longer in the dark. I've realized that spiritually I'm broken. I'm just as broken spiritually as I am drinking-wise, you know, physically drinking-wise. I'm thinking and convincing myself that the way that I'm treating people is normal, and that everybody drinks the way that I drink, everybody acts the way that I act, you know. So I get to this spot, and my sponsor, part of the deal is I agreed that I would do some simple actions, and part of those simple actions was saying some prayers. And when I got to these people that I couldn't get through some of these resentments for, and even today I still employ this, even after years of sobriety, I still employ the same tactic, which is I have to pray for that person's prosperity, their happiness. Now, these are people who are doing horrible things in some cases to me. And I say that now in a different light. I don't say it like I used to say it, but I've had some recent experiences, which is amazing how God works in my life, my higher power works in my life. I'm going through some situations and some stuff that's been going on for years. I was in a high-paying job, I'm doing all this stuff, I'm on top of the world, I've been sober for a little while, and I have a person who absolutely I used to drink with him, and we used to hang out, he used to work for me, and lo and behold, he became someone who was in a position of power. And this person ran a bunch of lies, and I mean, they started a whole bunch of stuff for me. So it's been 2 years that this has been going on. And I resented this guy, even in sobriety, for years. You know, this guy's, and I'm not doing anything. I'm not retaliating. I've made amends to this person. You know what I mean? I made amends to him when it was time. I've not run this person down. I've not participated in gossip, but this person has hacked away at me for the last 2 years. I lost my job because of it. I've caused havoc in my own personal relationships at home because of this person. And I have prayed every single day that I possibly can for this person. And it's being relieved now, you know? This is not easy, you know? Sobriety is not an easy trek, you know? I never once, and I'll share this with you because I only share that hard story with you, as Doug did, because I want to tell you this. Not once during these 2 years of dealing with this situation, and I mean, I've had to deal with attorneys, I've had to deal with a lot of stuff, I've had to deal with hearings and those types of things on my own. Not once did I walk out of one of those occasions and think, you know, it's a good idea. I should have a drink. Mm-hmm. You call that what you want to call it, but to me, that's a miracle. And there is no way that, left to my own devices, do I go through what I've been through and not think about drinking. Because that's not who I am as an alcoholic. My go-to is to say, F it, get a drink, and retaliate. I want to go after that person and be vindictive and manipulate the situation to get the outcome that I want. But instead, I practiced step 3. I practiced step 4. I practiced step 10 on a regular basis. I go to my knees in the morning, and I, trust me when I tell you, I was raised Catholic. It is what it is. I'm not a religious person. When I got here, if there was a God, he was angry at me. Take that for whatever, however you want to take that. I thought I was an atheist. If there was a God, he was mad. I get down on my knees every single day, regardless of what my belief in that is. And my belief is way different now. But I get down on my knees every day on a regular basis. And I say prayers for people like that, that are in my life right now. Because I know that the only way for me to be able to combat those situations is for me to make sure that I'm okay spiritually. Because if I'm not spiritually fit, and what I mean by that is, I agreed to do some simple actions when I first met my sponsor and I asked him to sponsor me. He gave me a list of items, and some of those included getting a home group, participating in that home group, calling other alcoholics, reading certain pages out of the book. You know, those types of things, saying prayers on a regular basis every single morning and every single evening. I agreed to do those things. And when I do those things, I'm spiritually fit and I'm able to deal with situations that used to baffle me. Our book says that, you know, I'm able to deal with things that used to baffle me. Because like I said, that's not my own doing. My own doing is controlling everybody and making every situation my liking to the way that I want it as bad as possible. But when I do the spiritual things and I agree to the spiritual part of this program, I'm okay. I used to walk around and think that life had to be really, really great, this party, you know, or it had to be really, really devastating and I was going to a funeral or somebody, you know what I mean? Like it was, there was no in between for me. There was no way for me to live in that middle median. Now, more days than not, I live okay. You know, where everything is okay and I know that it's going to be okay. Sure, there's ups and downs and not every day is a great day for me. But I know how to deal with them. I've been given the tools now as an alcoholic after being through the 12 steps of the program and practicing with the guys in the program and the people and the pro, you know, just everything that the program entails, I'm okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Next, we're going to flip over to page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. And then on page 66, it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die.
Powerful. boy, that just covered a couple of big things that was so pivotal to me in working a fourth step. You know, facing my issues in the past was really difficult. And it was easy to hide out blaming other people for what they did to me. The much harder thing to do was to be honest and look at things for the way they really were. And I had kind of two ways of looking at things. Either it was all your fault, or anybody else do this? Man, I blame myself for a lot of stuff. And I heap stuff on myself that was just beyond my control, and there was nothing else I could do. Or I just had no serious way of doing anything different. And I wasn't being honest with myself. And I wasn't cutting myself a break at all. And thank goodness, you know, working the step, I had some really good adult supervision, which was my sponsor. And, you know, when I asked him to be my sponsor, he said, look, are you ready to do the footwork? And I said, yeah, I am. He said, no, think about this hard. Are you ready to do it? You've heard these steps. Are you ready to get involved and get down to work? I had to pause and think about it. And I said, yeah, you know, I'm ready. I'll do it. I'll get to work. He said, all right. He said, because the problem is, from what you've told me, you started drinking when you were 13. And you stopped growing emotionally when you started drinking. So you need adult supervision. You're still a 13-year-old. Not in your physical being, but in your mind. That's where you are. And he was absolutely right. You know, I could handle all kinds of things, but when it got to emotional things, I went right back to being 13 years old, my behavior. And so I had to get honest. And I had to look at all the issues I had with alcohol, but I had to look at my part in it. And where was I in that? And man, sometimes that's tough to do. Sometimes I'd really try to hide out from it and not admit, you know, what my part was. And other times, I'd heap all of it. Oh, I did it. Yeah, it's all me. And he's going, whoa, wait a minute. It's easy to blame yourself for some things, but hey, you were a little kid and you had alcoholic parents. You know, your alcoholic father did this. You know, people you were with did this. And that's what it is to get really honest. And I needed somebody to kind of bounce that honesty off of. I had to be as honest as I could, but I had to be open to looking at things honestly. Which is why I just had to go through everything that had happened and then parse it out in the fifth step as we've been talking about a little bit. And that's where I needed that adult supervision and a little bit of guidance. And there was one other facet of that. And when I was in rehab, they told me, you know, the worst thing is that you're only as sick as your sickest secret. And man, did I have some secrets that I was hiding out from. And the only way to get rid of that feeling of just feeling wrong about those secrets was to drink it away. That was the only way to get around it. And it wasn't until I wrote it down in the fourth step and looked at it myself and then got gut level honest and shared it with God, myself, writing it down, and another human being, my sponsor. Doesn't have to be your sponsor, but it's got to be another human being. And they tell us that in the big book. That's the only time that it got better. That there was, that these secrets were taken away from me and that all that I felt was finally relieved. And I had a spiritual experience as a result of that. But there was no way to get spiritual. There was no way to feel that and feel that connection with a higher power without being honest and looking at it and then telling somebody honestly, not embellishing and not hiding out from the truth, but just being, I think they call it cash register honesty in the big book, just writing it all down, getting it all out there. And my sponsor made me, as I was going through it, he said, hey, we're doing a fearless moral inventory. He says, and they say it in the big book, I believe, you don't just do an inventory of all the bad stuff you have. You got to talk about the good too. And I had to do that. I had to take a complete look at myself and my behaviors, good and bad, and then share that with them. And that's when things got much better. And I got over some of those resentments. And they didn't all go away at once, but at least I was willing to address them honestly, and it took it away. And the last thing I'm going to share about it is this. They told me in rehab, but it's been my experience through Alcoholics Anonymous, that when I have these big, crippling issues and secrets and stuff that I keep to me, that as soon as I can share it with somebody else, especially another alcoholic, it cuts that problem in half. It takes that weight off by half because I shared it with somebody else. I got it out of me, and it's less. The pain, man, I'd run to alcohol to hide it. Did anybody else ever like do that? Kind of drown that a little bit? Anesthetize it? And that's what I did, you know. I was looking for that. And when I didn't have it anymore, it took sharing it to cut that pain down and get it out there. Get it to my God, get it to another human being. And that's when things got better. Thank you.
Yeah, I love this. These couple of paragraphs that we're going through. It reminds me, you know, and I joke a lot of times because I sit and, you know, I thought when I did all this, I thought that things were going to get really good for me. You know, I thought like life was just guaranteed to just smooth right on out and I was guaranteed to be really good, right? And that really wasn't the case for me. And some things got better, you know, and obviously I wasn't getting thrown in jail for drinking anymore. So that was a plus. I mean, that was a good thing. But I started writing stuff down and I started realizing that I was blaming all these people for the things that were going on. And in some cases they were wrong, you know. Luckily for me, I have a program now that I get to deal with my own stuff and there's still sick people running around. But I did notice it was a couple years in sobriety and I'd already done a 4-step and I'd done a 5th step and I'd worked through the 12 steps of the program that I was still having issues with something that's written in these paragraphs, which is fantastic because it reminds me, it says sometimes it was a remorse that we were more sore at ourselves, but the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. And I laugh at that part because when my life was at it the worst, I was getting everything I wanted. I was getting exactly what I wanted. I drank like I wanted. I partied like I wanted. I was in the job I wanted that was enabling me to do everything that I ever wanted. The matters got. So when I removed all that, you know, life got a little bit different, but the wars were still there. And one of the things that I noticed with the wars, and I had some experience with this, is I still tried to fight some of the wars as if I was still drinking. I tried to impress my will upon people and try to get outcomes that I wanted to have happen. And I'll give you an example of one. I had a situation with my kids, and I was fighting to have more time with my kids. Even though at the time, now looking back on it, it probably wasn't best that I had the little bit of time that I had with my kids, considering that I, you know, most of the time would come home and fall out of the car in the driveway and fall asleep right where I fell, out of the car, in front of my kids. So probably a good thing that I was around them very little, but I knew best, and I was guaranteed that I knew better than their mother, than my parents, whomever, and I decided I wanted to fight for that. When I did start that fight, I wound up being arrested in the middle of the night. I was told that I abused my children, and it cost me a ton of money to defend myself because I actually didn't do it, but I had fought my ex so long and so hard and so vigorously because I knew best what was in that situation at that moment. I knew what was best, and I was imposing my own will upon it. And the outcome was not very favorable for me. So again, it says, as in war, the victor only seemed to win. The triumphs are short-lived. So for me, I had to step back from those situations and realize that my life needs to center around Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when I'm doing the things that I was talking about earlier, the simple actions, and when I'm working the steps and doing all those things, I'm no longer running around playing God. I'm no longer running around treating you all like chess pieces, moving you here and there to get the outcome that I want. I don't know, and for some reason, my life gets better when I stop doing that. It's amazing. When I'm not getting what I think I want, things in my life are better. After I went through all that and I started imposing step three, I went through a step four with this situation, and I stopped fighting. I ceased fighting everything and everyone. And I gave into the, wouldn't you know that I started spending more time with my kids. My son actually wound up living with me full time after that, probably about a year later than that. But I wasn't running around acting arrogant and selfish and self-centered and trying to tell everybody how they should be living their lives. I'd given up and admitted that I was powerless. I had decided that I could no longer do this on my own and that the higher power was gonna take care of it for me, so I gave it step three. I stepped into step four wholeheartedly and was honest about the situation. Again, the only times I've ever been honest in my life was, you know, when I did step four, really. I do it differently now, of course, but when I do step four, I just know that I don't have to be afraid anymore, you know? And I think that's what my biggest motivator, looking back on it, is just fear. I'm fearful of everything. I have anxiety to no end when I'm sick in spiritual malady. I'm scared to death of everything. I'm scared to death I'm not going to have enough money. I'm scared to death I'm going to lose my job. I'm scared that you all right now are sitting there judging me. You know, like that's how my brain thinks as an alcoholic. So for me, you know, having the ability to come in here and share and sit here next to other alcoholics and with you all, it gives me the relief that I need from the noise that goes on in my head. Because that's what I like to refer to it as. It's kind of the white noise. You know, like a TV, when the TV stations used to cut off back in the day, and I'm kind of dating myself now, but the white noise would come on. That's what my head sounds like in my thoughts, you know? So for me, in order to be spiritually fit and get through life the way that I do, I have to depend on you all. I have to depend on this program, and I have to depend on a higher power.
Thank you. Our next reading is on page 66 also. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. And we're running a little short on time, so I'm going to read the final reading also on page 67. Referring to our list again, putting out of their minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. You guys have a couple minutes to wrap up.
All right. I'll keep it quick because we're getting there. But pretty much what we've talked about tonight is falls right in line with this. I had to be honest with myself and see exactly what I had done wrong and work through that with another person, eventually at step five, so I could be clear on what I had done. I wasn't completely clear doing it in step four, and that's where I needed help, was in step five. But by making a list of people And it was more than just that one example I told you about. I had to see my part in it, and I had to take responsibility for my actions, my part in all of that. And it cleared things up for me. I also understood where people did things to me, and I got a more honest and real idea of what was going on there. And then the other part of it, which I've already shared with you, is taking a look at it and actually praying for somebody else, you know, but by more clearly and honestly understanding the situation, if they deserved, you know, forgiveness, I had to do it. And I'll share this, that it was my sponsor again who talked to me about this, and I had talked to him about things I had gone through, and he said, "Well," he goes, "did you ever forgive anybody before?" And I said, "What do you mean?" "Yeah, you know, I've forgiven." He goes, "No." He said, "When you forgive somebody, when you can do that, that's it. It's over. It never happened. It's done. You have to lay it to rest, and you can't bring it back up again. That's forgiveness. When you let it go all the way, and it's done." And wow, I had never really forgiven anybody before. I'd said, "Yeah, I forgive you," but I was keeping a list, you know. I was ready to go after him. He said, "No, when you forgive somebody, you're done. It's over. You put it down and you just move on." I said, "Yeah, but what if they do something wrong to you again?" Said, "Then you deal with that. But by not carrying it," he said, "it makes the load a lot lighter and it makes life a lot easier to deal with." And he was absolutely right. That when I actually forgave people, including myself, put it behind me, man, it let room for God, let room for higher power, instead of carrying resentment around. And life was so much better. But that takes some sincere honesty, you know. And I'm not saying I did anything perfectly, not by a long shot. And I'm not God, and I'm not the best at this, but I was sincere in working the fourth step, and I really put down what I was really feeling, and I got through most of the feelings, so very little came up after that. I've been sober for 20 years this year, and I'm feeling really good, but I have noticed that there are other things that I hadn't even covered in the past that come up. Memories that I just didn't have anymore. And I've talked to other alcoholics. Anybody else have that experience where you get better and then all of a sudden, whoa, I never even knew about that or never thought about that? So this isn't something that I could just work once and I'm like, hey, I'm good. I'm done. I'm spiritual perfection. This is something I have to go back and readdress and touch base with again. But by being willing to do it and by being honest about it, I can get there. And then, you know, it addressed it in here. And freedom from bondage in that big book. Reading that, that gives me the grace and the opportunity to forgive people and to really take a look at what I need to do to get past all those feelings of resentment. And once I did that, and I shared it with my sponsor, I gave every secret I ever had. He didn't say a word. Not for like a full minute, and a minute's a long time to be in total silence. He didn't say anything. And then finally, the end of a minute, he said, "Do you feel this feeling right now?" And I share it with people all the time. I felt like I was naked on the pitcher's mound in Yankee Stadium with the floodlights on me because I had just shared every secret I had. And I felt like, oh man, what's he gonna say and what's gonna happen? You know, he goes, "This feeling you feel right now," he said, "this is what it is to be in the presence of God." And it was the first time I'd ever felt God, and it was a spiritual experience.
So, I'm sitting here and I'll be really brief. I know we're running out of time, but you know, I didn't realize that before Alcoholics Anonymous, I walked around really angry all the time. That was pretty much who I was. Again, I was confused. I really thought I was a nice guy, but I really did not like you. And I had no problem telling you that I did not like you. That's just who I was. And as we're talking about the things that we realize about ourselves, is it's even hard for me to sit here now and realize the person who I am now, and then I look back on the person that I was, and I could feel that anger that I used to have right now. I mean, I can feel it in my heart how that used to feel. And going through the steps, and step four, if you have not done step four and you're thinking about it or you're dragging your feet on it, I can tell you that at the moment I did step four and then jumped into step five with my sponsor was the first time that I ever took a real deep breath spiritually and just stopped. And I don't, maybe that was a spiritual experience. I don't really try to, I don't think of it. I don't know whether it was or not, but I can tell you this. It was the first time that I took a deep breath and I was not at the core of who I am angry at everyone and everything in the world. When I completed these steps, I felt like I was relieved because I knew that I didn't have to walk around angry anymore. Sure, do I get angry? Yeah, I still get angry at certain things, you know, driving around in traffic. Nobody's perfect, you know what I mean? Traffic around here is crazy. But, you know, for me, I mean, the situations that I just told you about, I am able to walk through life now and look at those situations, and I can honestly tell you, yes, I have bouts of resentments and I have bouts of anger towards someone, but I can pray now about that and go through the steps with my sponsor, talking through things, and I can get to the other side of it and with relatively little anger in my heart. And for me as an alcoholic, that's a truly amazing gift given to me. That isn't something that I created. That's something that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous gave to me, because I didn't know how to do that on my own. That's truly something that a higher power and the people in these rooms gave to me. I'm not able to do that on my own. Only through the grace of a higher power and you all is that possible for somebody like me. So if you're on the fence over step four, I would suggest highly that you jump into it. I know it's not easy, it's not great, but my advice is from somebody who procrastinated on it and spent some time in being sober but angry still in a dry drunk, it's not fun. Just do it and get through it. You'll see on the other side, it's a much better place to live. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. We are now going to pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. At this time, are there any AA-related announcements? No, Jonathan.
I'm Jonathan, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
And this Friday,
okay, Mayor Alcoholic. This Friday, March 29th, our home group, the Candlelight Meeting on Colley Avenue, will be having an Ask It basket where we're going to pass around the basket. People, it's really focused on newcomers, I'm sure anyone who can throw something if they want, where they can put a question in the basket around our panel, people are answering those questions. It's going to be Leo R., Bobby B., and Linda T. That starts at 8. At 6:30, we're going to have a dinner, so if you want to bring a dish, please do. That's at 6:30, I think I got it right. Yeah, 8 o'clock is when we do the meeting. So okay. Friday the 29th.
Thanks, Larry. Any other announcements? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
I'm Sam, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Sam.
Hi, Sam. Welcome.
I'm Brian, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Brian.
Brian, welcome.
Jonathan, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jonathan.
I'm Ashley, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ashley.
Welcome.
Welcome, everyone. We have literature available on this table that David is at. It's available for purchase. If you need a big book, if you can fold it, it's free. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, don't delay. If you have questions about sponsorship or like additional information, I will be available at this table after we close. Please feel free to talk to me and be glad to answer any questions you have. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, can we thank our panel? Thank you to all who's participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on step four at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on Colonial and 22nd Street. Could I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Grant?
I'm Grant, I'm an alcoholic. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find in holiness. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as we trudge that road of happy destiny. May God bless you.
Thanks, Grant. So we're going to close with the Lord's Prayer, if you'd like to join.
Let's go around the table.
You must be an engineer.